The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for Thursday, January 15th, 2009. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. In agricultural news, the Senate Agriculture Committee heard from USDA Secretary nominee Tom Vilsack. We'll have a report. And Todd Gleason will talk about University of Illinois plans to study soil sulfur conditions in 2009. And we'll have the latest on agricultural weather with agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt. It's all on the Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Asgrow's new Roundup Ready 2-yield soybeans. Lernard Seed Service provides services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. 217-497-2270.
Thursday afternoon, prices settled like this. In Kansas City, March wheat 594.5 down 5.5. May 605.5 down 5.75. At the Board of Trade, March wheat 568.75 down 5.5. July 592.75 down 5.25. March corn 365.25 down 1.25. May 376.25 down 1.25. July 386.5 down 1.25. December 411 down 0.5. February crude oil, the settlement 35.40 down 1.88. The February ethanol contract settled at 154.8 down 2.3. March beans 994.5 up 23. May 10.03 up 23. July 10.13 up 23.25. November 9.60 up 5.5. March soybean meal $305 up $8. March soybean oil 34.40 up 35. February live cattle 84.35 up 100. January feeders 95 down 70. And February lean hogs 59.82.5 down 10 points on the day. And those are Thursday afternoon's settlements in Chicago and Kansas City. Take a little bit of a more extended look at the outside markets. March crude oil, the settlement 43.54, down 85 cents. March ethanol settled, well, it's still trading at 158, and it's down 8 tenths. February natural gas 484.8, down 11.7 now. The February ARBOB is at 116.2, down 0.5. February heating oil 148.2, down, and it is actually up 1.9. February propane 77 even, it's down a nickel. The silver contract for March at 10.44 is down 3.5. The gold contract for February, the settlement 807.30, down $1.50 on the day. Mike Sola's two-state forecast includes some wind chill warnings and advisories. He says a wind chill warning is in effect for the northern half of Illinois and Indiana until midday on Friday, while a wind chill advisory is in effect for most of the southern half of Illinois and Indiana into midday on Friday. Otherwise, tonight, mostly clear and bitterly cold, lows ranging from 22 below zero to around zero in the far south. Tomorrow, mostly sunny and not quite as cold, highs ranging from near zero in northeastern Indiana to 25 degrees in southwestern Illinois. Joining us now with a look at the futures market is Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. Good afternoon, Dan.
Hi, Dave.
Well, we've had quite a yo-yo of an affair this week in the soybean market. Limit down on Monday, tried to make some gains later in the week, making some gains today. I don't know if it's a hook reversal up today or not for sure. You can tell me. But all in all, it's trying to make a stand in here, or what's going on?
Well, I think you have to say that. We had a pretty good reversal down there on Monday. We did trade higher during Sunday night's trade. So we did exceed Friday's high, and then, of course, after the report there we had there on Monday, the market eventually finished limit down. So you had an awfully bearish outside-down reversal there on Monday. But the market from that point forward has not been really able to show any downside follow-through activity. Actually, we held steady there on Tuesday. Wednesday was kind of a steady day. And now today, the market was able to recover at least a good chunk of the losses that we had there on Monday. So the bean chart looks pretty good when you look at it from a daily perspective. Soybeans do have a tendency to follow a couple of different cyclical patterns. I think the low that we saw there in December was more of a 17, 18, 19 type week cycle low. And those cycles have a tendency to move in a couple different patterns, either a couple eights, 8 to 9 type week cycles, or they can maybe follow 3 5 to 6 week cycles, or a combination of them. And the way the market is performing here this week after that sharp down move on Monday, there's reason to believe that we may have put in one of these short-term 6-week cycle lows in here, and the market is now ready to resume the upward momentum that has had basically since early December.
So what would you like to see tomorrow that would give you confidence of this turning? Would you like to see a settlement above today's high?
Well, that would be a big step. Preferably, I'd like to see us go back and at least close even for the week, and that may be a challenge. The March beans here had a close on last Friday at 10:36. Today we're at 9:94. So, I mean, we would have to be, you know, 30, 40 cents higher tomorrow. I think that's possible, but it's hard to believe that we would see that type of up move going into a 3-day weekend. But, you know, we are in a weather market. But barring at least coming back to Friday's close or a higher weekly close, a technician that wants to argue the bull side of the equation, I think would be happy with a good solid close above $10.
And what do you make of the meal charts?
Meal is, definitely it chopped people around a little bit. Meal is somewhat similar to soybeans, where you had an outside down day there on Monday. No follow-through, so to speak. I mean, a week ago Friday or a week ago Thursday, a week ago Friday, meal looked like it was breaking out of a sideways pattern, and we were going to start visiting levels up into the 350, 360. But, of course, after Monday's reversal down, that kind of dimmed those kind of hopes. But now, with the market having recovered a good chunk of Monday's gains, soybean meal is kind of in that position to maybe make one of these 6-week cycle lows and then maybe try to recover here into the first part of February or to the at least to the end of January.
So you like the 291 area as a level of support and maybe potentially think that we might, on a rally, look, there's a gap there left over from September in that area around 3.25. 325.
I mean, the bean market, at least it has some fundamentals behind it. I mean, we did sell 1.2 million beans, I think, here last week. Now, that bean demand's probably only going to last a few more weeks because South American inventories are going to take over the world market. But the weather problems in Argentina is shrinking that soybean crop down somewhat. So we don't have no real excess inventory of oil seeds or soybean product throughout the world. So you have to be somewhat friendly soybeans. The chart pattern is generally supportive for more continuation of a retracement rally. However, I do believe it is a bear market rally. So you have to be a little careful and not get too carried away on the bull side of the argument, but the bean complex does look like we have a little more up in it here in the short run.
Will the South American producer let beans go, knowing that they're facing those more stiffer export tariffs? They're been in a big fight with the government about that.
Well, I know, they also have bills to pay and taxes to pay and all that kind of stuff. So, actually, Argentine farmers have some old crop beans left that they're still hanging on to. But eventually they're going to have to let some go. But, that is, some political turbulence in Argentina, and at least we are a beneficiary of that.
Let's turn our attention to the corn chart then. Demand again today, well, in a word, lousy, and it has been lousy ever since the beginning of the marketing year. We're something like 52% behind a year ago. What do you make of it as it plays out on the charts?
Well, corn is, if we're going to get anything going on the upside, is going to have help from something other than demand at this point, or we're going to have to see a big about face on demand, and that doesn't seem like that's in the works, at least in the near term here. I think today's up move beans did at least help corn close unchanged or so here today. I think corn could also be in one of these smaller cyclical patterns. I think the early December low can be viewed as a 20-week low. And that 20-week cycle can kind of unfold in a couple different ways, a couple tens or about three six to sevens. There is a shot here. If beans can confirm that type of pattern, it might be able to pull corn with it and pull corn up into at least some form of recovery rally of what we've lost here this week and, as we go into the end of the month, first part of February.
Are lofty goals like $5 in your mindset out of the picture in the short term then?
They are for the old crop in the next, window in here over the next 90 days or so. I think that those are pretty long odds for something like that to happen. You never know if beans. I do think beans are in position to probably go a whole lot higher than anybody thinks if the weather would break if we don't get real good rains in South America and that crop comes down. Then you could maybe lift this corn, March corn, maybe up to 450 area. But 450 at the moment looks like a pretty brick wall. But I would not rule that out. I think the $5 stuff is all going to be somewhere in the 09 crop year. That's going to be 09. Those are going to be the targets for 09 because I think by the time the 09-10 crop year comes around, corn demand is going to be much improved. Depending upon how corn plantings go this spring, we could end up planting a couple million acres less of corn, and all of a sudden you've got a balance sheet looks pretty attractive for the 09-10 crop year.
Thank you much, Dan.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group, he is in Decatur, Illinois.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Kathy Ferguson in Morris at 815-941-3758. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
In agricultural news, the nominee for USDA secretary addressed a wide range of issues during yesterday's confirmation hearing before the Senate Agriculture Committee. Former Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack said that if he is confirmed, he will work to boost the economies of farm communities, promote nutritious foods, and help poor families put meals on the table. Several farm state senators urged Vilsack to help the corn-based ethanol industry, including the possibility of raising the percentage of ethanol that can be blended into automotive fuel above the current 10% limit. South Dakota Republican John Thune.
The wall that we run into with E10 that is going to make it very difficult, I think, for our ethanol producers to be profitable, to operate in the black. That's a point where the supply of ethanol is going to exceed the demand. And I think part of that is a function of the fact that we only allow 10% blends.
Vilsack says he's well aware of the recent struggles of corn-based ethanol producers to be profitable, a reason he says to move swiftly toward advanced biofuels.
The margins are very, very small, and frankly, you're going to have to be a very efficient manager over the course of the next several years to do well. We can help with our research and development component by figuring out ways in which the processing of ethanol can be more efficiently done in a less energy-intensive way, in getting more out of whatever feedstock we use.
Vilsack has been a champion of corn-based ethanol, a central part of his short-lived campaign for president 2 years ago, and he has endorsed tax breaks for the ethanol industry. But yesterday, Vilsack made no guarantees to commit to higher ethanol blends. Rather, he says if ethanol is to meet future federally mandated renewable fuel standards, bioresearch and development must be accelerated. Renewable fuels policy, along with subsidies for that industry, is expected to be a top issue for the incoming secretary. Senators were critical during the nomination hearing of how the Bush administration is implementing the new farm bill. Georgia Republican Saxby Chambliss, the ranking GOP member on the Agriculture Committee, says USDA under outgoing Secretary Ed Schaefer changed congressional farm bill intent through new regulations.
Governor, as a member of the Senate, I've been very concerned that the administration has liberally interpreted language in the farm bill, and at times has gone beyond the law as written and disregarded the accompanying report language. For example, the final rule for the direct and counter-cyclical program and average crop revenue election program published December 29, 2008, makes a change to farm bill commodity programs that was never intended by us when we drafted the farm bill and passed it.
Vilsack says USDA and Congress will not always see eye to eye, but he pledged to keep lines of communication open.
I'm not going to tell you today that there might not be a disagreement from time to time, but I will tell you this, that if there is, I will be available to respond, and if there is a mistake or a problem, we will rectify it as quickly as we can.
Chambliss also said that he hopes that Vilsack will listen to concerns from all parts of the country in his tenure at agriculture. Vilsack said he would work closely with the Health and Human Services Secretary to make nutrition a key element in health care reform. Good news for the nation's fruit and vegetable industries, but a potentially contentious position among dairy and livestock lobbyists. On trade, Vilsack said it is important for the Agriculture Secretary to make sure that the interests of American farmers are, quote, not bargained away in negotiations. And Vilsack says he would try to resolve long-standing racial discrimination issues at USDA. Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Tom Harkin, like Vilsack from Iowa, said after the hearing that he knew of no objections to Vilsack's nomination. Harkin says he hopes that the full Senate will confirm him next Tuesday afternoon after President-elect Barack Obama's morning inauguration. The soil fertility specialist at the University of Illinois is planning a sulfur study for the 2009 growing season. Todd Gleason reports.
We think of fertilizer or plant food as being primarily N, P, and K, or nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. The next macronutrient on the list, says University of Illinois soil fertility and plant nutrition specialist Fabian Fernandez, is sulfur.
Sulfur is one of the essential elements, so the plant needs sulfur in order to complete its life cycle. And it requires quite a bit of sulfur. We divide the nutrients into macro elements or micro elements. Macro means that they are needed in large supply, micro that are needed in less supply, and so sulfur is one of the macro elements, meaning that it's needed in a large supply. And typically we don't worry about it because there is enough in the soil to supply the needs of the crop, but as I mentioned, we are seeing more and more responses to sulfur as we increase production and we reduce the amount of inputs of sulfur.
The amount of sulfur soils in the state are being exposed to annually has declined dramatically over the last three decades. It means, says the soil scientist, that adding a bit of sulfur to the fertilizer mix can cause a corn yield response. He surmises, but cannot be sure, that response comes because of the lower sulfur inputs.
Some of the reasons are that we have higher yields than what we had 3 years ago, so there is more removal or more potential removal of sulfur. Industry is burning a lot cleaner, so there is less sulfur deposition from the atmosphere. And there are less inputs of sulfur in the farming system. There are less fertilizers that have sulfur in them, as well as insecticides and pesticides.
It seems clear, then, that there is a lack of this macronutrient, but that doesn't mean it's true. So, U of I Extension's Fabian Fernandez is setting up a statewide sulfur study. He's looking for a few good farmers to give him a hand.
That's right, yes. We would like to get a good representation of the state. So looking at, we are right now looking for volunteers that could participate in this program. As many sites as possible. The more sites we have, the better it is for this type of research. And in terms of what we are looking for specifically, we are looking for fields that are low in organic matter, fields that have coarse texture, sandy soils types, that will more likely respond to sulfur, and so across the state, basically.
Fernandez says for the purposes of this study, he is not interested in testing soils where sulfur or manure has been applied in the last 5 years. Those interested in participating in the sulfur study can call or email Fabian Fernandez on the University of Illinois campus in Urbana-Champaign. His email address is Fernandez without the Z on the end of it, Fernandez@illinois.edu, and his phone number is 217-333-4426. That's 217-333-4426. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities, hosting these planning seminars in January, on the 14th in Valparaiso, Indiana, the 17th in West Lafayette, Indiana, the 19th in Mount Carmel, Illinois, the 20th in Hoopston, Illinois, the 21st in Rensselaer, Indiana, and the 22nd in Lima, Ohio.
It's National Strawberry Ice Cream Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1785, William Prout was born, an English chemist. He was the first to classify food components into three divisions: carbohydrates, fats, and proteins. In 1863, wood pulp paper was first used in the U.S. for a printed newspaper by the Boston Morning Herald of Boston, Massachusetts. It was a four-page, eight-column newspaper that sold for 3 cents a copy. In 1889, a patent was issued to Daniel Johnson of Kansas City for a rotary dining table for use on ships. The table and attached chairs rotated so that everyone could be served from one spot. In 1919, the Great Molasses Flood occurred. a large 50-foot-high storage tank in Boston burst and sent a tidal wave of over 2 million gallons of molasses traveling at over 30 miles per hour across the city. Houses, buildings, and parts of the elevated rail system were crushed in its path. 21 people died, and over 150 were injured. It took over 6 months to clean up the mess, and the damage was in the millions of dollars. And in 1990, Campbell's Soup produced its 20 billionth can of tomato soup. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for our look at the agricultural weather is agricultural meteorologist Peter Leffitt. Good afternoon, Peter.
Good afternoon, David.
As we go out here and begin to look at conditions, we do know that today was 30 and 90 reporting day for the weather department, and we do want to spend a little bit of time getting what they had to say.
Okay, on the extended outlook, the third Thursday of each month is when it comes out, and what they've done is exceeded a little bit to the fact that it's cold. They've got it colder in the Pacific Northwest for February, and mild across the entire southern part of the country from New Mexico, southern New Mexico eastward to the mid-Atlantic coast. And equal chances is their term for what happens across the Midwest. In other words, it could be warm or cold or whatever. I want to point out that their forecast for January was above normal across most of the country. So use that as a guide in how you judge some of these extended forecasts. And the 90-day forecast is pretty much the same thing. They have it cold in the Pacific Northwest, and they've got it warm from Utah and New Mexico and Arizona eastward to the Appalachians, except for the upper Midwest and northern plains, which are equal chances again. So we're looking at their forecast, their persistent forecasting warmer than normal temperatures for a large portion of the country, and nature just doesn't seem to want to cooperate. By the way, a brief note I heard just ahead of me there about the big molasses flood in Boston many years ago on this date. That happened as a result of a thaw that occurred after an extended, very cold period, which cracked the storage tanks on top of a building, and it all let loose. And it's almost a unique disaster in the United States, the Boston molasses flood.
Yes, it was. Let's go ahead and look at South America and focus on Argentina, please.
Okay. In South America, it's the Argentine continues to have some problems with getting precipitation there, unlike the areas further north, which I think are doing better than most people expect, even though we hear some tales of difficulties in southern Brazil. It does not appear to be too bad based on the weather, but in the Argentine, it has been kind of tough. It's been alternately wet and dry in the west, but the east, which had had some good moisture early this season, has dried out, and it looks like a generally dry pattern is going to persist out there. So there are some problems in the Argentine. How much an impact it will have, well, I'll leave that to the marketeers.
About 30 seconds left. What other areas are you looking at?
Well, of course, we're looking right here in the U.S. because of this extraordinary cold outbreak where we had these temperatures this morning as 14 degrees at Champaign, minus 14 degrees at Champaign, minus 16 at Bloomington, and in the minus 20s in parts of northwest Illinois. We're going to have another one of those cold nights tonight. And then things will moderate, but we're going to keep the temperatures below normal right through the middle of next week. Not as cold as today or tomorrow, but they will be below normal. Then a little moderation late in the week, but we're not seeing any warm weather anytime soon. The good news is we're not seeing any significant precipitation either.
Thank you, Peter.
Mm-hmm, my pleasure.
Agricultural meteorologist Peter Levin, and that is today's Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey.